This podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended to replace professional medical advice or be a substitute for therapy. Please contact a mental health professional as needed. If you are in need of urgent or emergency health care, please contact your medical and/or mental health provider, call 911, or go to your nearest emergency room. The information presented in this podcast does not reflect the opinions of those with whom Dr. Ellick might be affiliated as an employee, consultant, or colleague, past or present. Hello, and welcome to another episode of From Mayhem to Mindset with Dr. Laura. I am your host, Dr. Laura Ellick. Coming back from a little bit of a hiatus, I cannot think of a guest that I am more thrilled to come back and talk to. So I am super excited to introduce to you guys Alicia Leshefsky. This is a woman who we met randomly, through an introduction from somebody else. But you ever know how, like, when you meet somebody and it's just like, ooh, it's like, wow, what, you found like a kindred spirit. So let me tell you about Alicia. Alicia is the founder of Brand Ethos, a communications consulting firm, and Kind Ethos. At Kind Ethos, the team consults on initiatives to improve the culture and mental health of corporate employees, students, and athletes by educating leaders on how to identify issues and develop impactful solutions. She is the leader of the Stop the Mobbing movement, a subtle form of bullying that is prevalent yet unchecked in today's world, and the author of the soon-to-be-released book under the same title. Prior to forming her own businesses, Alicia held senior leadership positions in global companies leading marketing, communications, and corporate culture across the world. A graduate of Clemson University, she is married and has four children. Well, first of all, I just want to say thank you, Alicia. Number two, you look phenomenal after having raised four children. So, like, how did you do that? Because I'm sure that had a lot with you figuring out your brand too, right? Strategies that you came up with in your own life. How did you like get that aha moment to be like, this is what the corporate culture needs?
Oof, that's a big question right there. So yeah, I mean, obviously, thank you for your kind words. And I think that, you know, I'm still raising them. So I still have one going into eighth grade, and my daughter's going to Clemson here soon. And it's not easy. And, you know, it's like anything. It's a lot of trial and error. But, you know, when it comes to, you know, what culture means, in the corporate world, you know, I've seen the best of it and I've seen the worst of it. And I think that what's happening today is that everybody loves to talk about, oh, we have the best work culture. And, you know, I think Google many years ago, that was like the cool place to work. And, you know, and I'm sure it is, like, this is nothing against Google, but, you know, I think what's happening is so many people try to ride the bandwagon. And so it becomes a label for your culture and not what it actually is. And so, and then it's become very prevalent, not only in schools, right? Where, you know, oh, we have an open door policy or we have this, but do you? And it's the same thing with companies. Like, nobody wants to talk about the ugly stuff. Nobody wants to talk about what's really going on. And so, you know, I think that those experiences, whether it be things that I've seen, you know, with my kids, around my kids in sports, what I've seen in corporations, the good and the bad, have really kind of shaped where we are with this practice. And obviously, being a communications person by trade, you know, I have the ability to kind of put it into words and put it into a way that makes it easy for people to understand.
So one branch of your company is communication consulting. So what is that exactly?
So I've been a, you know, global chief marketing officer. I've kind of done all the marketing communications things. And so, you know, marketing, communications, brand culture, the creative stuff, all that stuff fell under my scope of responsibility and at the different companies that I worked with. And so, you know, I think, I'm not sure if we talked about this yet, but I had a proactive double mastectomy. So I had a proactive double mastectomy. And at the time, I was working for a company that was headquartered on the other side of the world. And, you know, not the best corporate culture. I would say probably top 10 worst. And they, you know, was just getting some really mean emails the morning of my surgery as I was driving to the hospital. My husband was driving me to the hospital. You could probably say, why the hell were you reading your emails? You know what I mean? As you were going into a double mastectomy. But, you know, I was, and that was probably part of the problem, is that that was what was expected. So anyhow, I just told my husband, if I flatlined during the surgery, because that was my biggest fear, remind me that I'm going to quit my job. And 3 weeks later, I did. And, you know, this is the short version of the story. But, you know, I always said I wanted to start my own company and create the type of business that I always wished existed when I was looking to hire marketing and communications firms to support me. You know, you don't always have the budget or the resources to hire another full-time employee, but you know, you do need extra brains and minds. And so that's what we created with Brand Ethos. So Kind Ethos is a completely separate company born out of this movement that I think we're going to talk about. And that's really taking that same mindset of, you know, we've got this problem that most companies need to face with their corporate culture, with how they're tolerating how employees speak to each other, treat each other, how we have so many leaders that are just not prepared to deal with this. And that's going to keep getting worse because we're promoting, you know, nothing against millennials or anybody else, but like as we promote people without really teaching them the art of things like a tough conversation or just feedback in a very honest and respectful way, things are going to get worse. And so that's really the genesis for Kind Ethos, which is separate from the branding company, but I still have that. But, you know, obviously this is my passion right now.
I love this. And this feeds right into the conversation that you and I have had, which started this entire thing.
Yes.
Which, listen, I've worked in the mental health field for 25 years. I've been in a variety of places. So no one company can identify that I'm talking about them because I've worked at so many different places. But I have to just say there has been a negative corporate culture, more so I've seen in mental health than in any of the other places that I have worked in, educational facilities, colleges. It's very disturbing. And I think I've said this maybe to you or to other people that therapists aren't necessarily great at administration or healthcare leadership. And we're missing a lot of things there. But what we're seeing in the culture is just a spin-off of playground dynamics where there is, you know, bullying. And you call it mobbing, and we're going to hear about the difference, but I have been the victim and have observed mobbing in my personal life, as we've talked about, but also in several of these places going back many, many, many years. So this is old stuff, guys. This isn't something that, oh, we just decided to name. Yeah. It's been going on for a long time. No one talks about it. And so tell us about mobbing and how your passion came to be.
So what is mobbing? So, you know, mobbing is a form of bullying. You are correct. And, you know, I think that it's a subset of it. It's definitely different. And when we think about bullying, you know, most people have a strong reaction because there's bullying policies. Gosh, if thank God mine have not been accused of it. But, you know, if your kid gets called in and said, oh, they were bullying somebody else, you know, I think those of us as parents, we have a reaction. And I think a kid has a reaction if they're being called a bully. Naturally, you should have that reaction. That should not feel good, right? We know what that looks like. Mobbing is subtle, and it's so different in the sense that, you know, someone, you know, wants to just kind of get rid of you. Is really the best way to say it. For whatever reason, you might be a threat to them. They might not like you. It does not matter what the reason is. And so what they do is they start to say, you know what? We're not friends anymore. And then it becomes, well, you know why? I can't tell you. And then it becomes, you know what? Let's make sure everybody else knows that if they're friends with you or they help you at work or they associate with you at school, then they're going to be my next target, right? Now, they're not going to say that outright. It's just, it's subtle. And so normally the person that starts the mobbing has some sort of power in the group dynamic. Most of the people that I have interviewed the lead mobber, like to that, I've really interviewed victims. You can imagine mobbers don't want to be interviewed because they don't think they have a problem. But the lead mobber normally had done it to other people in the past, right? Like there was a history of it. So there was already a dynamic where people were afraid of them. And so fast forward, what makes mobbing different than bullying is much more of kind of a one target, you know, maybe other people, there's bystanders and they just kind of don't say anything because they don't know how, but they're not necessarily participating in it.
Right.
Mobbing is where everybody is participating in it. And most of the time, some people are participating in it because they don't even know that they're participating in it because they don't even know what mobbing is. Mm-hmm. I've done it. You've done it. We've all done it. So this is not a school on, you know, how to be perfect because I'm sure I'll do it again. I mean, by accident, you know, you just don't know. And so, and most of it's from fear. Like nobody, you know, at work when it happened to me, you know, I mean, nobody wants to be the person that's, you know, getting iced out. You know what I mean? Nobody wants to be the person that the lead mobber makes their next victim. Nobody wants to lose their job because of that, right? I wrote myself out of the movie.
It's the iced out. That's what makes it so different from bullying. I think of schoolyard bullies, someone who threatens to punch you and you have a fight in the schoolyard and then, you know, then it's all over, right? The principal breaks it up. You're all done. I also find with women, and you and I have talked about this, they do this insidious kind of, we're not going to tell you what's wrong. We're just all of a sudden going to stop having lunch with you. Or all of a sudden, I'm not including you on group emails. Right. Or you may find on Instagram, your whole group of friends is out to lunch and you weren't invited. And they're all showing a picture of it. Is that the kind of thing that we're talking about?
Yeah. And so, you know, and it's funny, like, obviously, you're a doctor of this. And so, you know, I studied obviously what bullying is and when, and I think, you know, I want to take a step back though. I didn't invent the word mobbing. Like really smart people invented it. There's a guy by the name of Heinz Lehmann that invented it in the, I thought it was the 60s, it was the 90s, but I mean, the term has been around and it was specific to really workplace mobbing, but mm-hmm. nobody has heard of it. Like that's part of the problem, right? People who study, you know, psychology and mental health for a living like you hadn't heard of it, but it is a very academic term. And right. so, but you have to go looking for it. And because of that, you know, we might as well not have the term, right? Which is mm-hmm. what I'm trying to do. So, mm-hmm. so, you know, back to your question, you know, it is everything that you say. It's quite insidious and it's how people maneuver. I think in the 90s, there was a term that came out, relational aggression, if you've uh-huh. heard of that. And so, uh-huh. you know, I was interviewed last week by another psychologist and he was like, well, this is relational aggression, but it's different, right? And so, you know, I think mobbing in and of itself, how I really believe we should look at it is that as everybody participates, it's beyond just not going to lunch. And it's beyond all of a sudden people are going to drop you, right? Guess what? They're going to drop you. And as I tell my kids, not everybody's going to like you in this world. And we know that. But when it comes to mobbing, you are the target. Their goal, spoken or unspoken, is complete social isolation. And I believe the biggest difference is that it's happening in a place that you can't escape, like work, mm-hmm. like school, like an athletic team. It's hard. It's not everybody can just say, oh, I'm going to go find a new job, especially when you're a senior leader, right? That's not easy. I wrote myself out of the movie. I mentally could not take it. But a psychiatrist that this job literally took me to the level where I had to go see one for the first time in my life was like, that sounds like mobbing. I read that in a journal somewhere.
Wow.
That is how. And then as I started looking into it, I eventually kind of wrote myself out of the movie. I volunteered to be laid off because I couldn't take it. I literally couldn't take it anymore. And then I started seeing it happen to my daughter. And then I started talking to people and they're like, oh my God, there's a name. And when you hear the name, you feel so validated.
Sure. I can only imagine. I mean, I'm thinking about it just in terms of total destruction. They want to just bring you down for whatever reason it happens to be, right? And so the onus then becomes on the individual who is being bullied or mobbed to rescue themselves. And the other person never has to take any accountability.
No. And it's so funny because, and nobody wants to help because they're afraid, you know, and there's some cases, I just interviewed a lady that, I mean, it was really sad. She's in the book and, I can't even, I mean, she's still so afraid. She's only like 2 years out of it. So you could tell, like, she still had like some PTSD, which is, I don't use those letters lightly, you know? And so, but yeah, she, you know, she's just had to relocate her family because like they relocated for a job. It happened to her. Then they had to relocate back on the other side of the country at their own expense because she just couldn't take it anymore. But what was so telling is that it took her resigning for one of the people that was on the inside that was doing the mobbing to feel bad. And so then they came out right before she moved. And was like, look, I just want to let you know, like, we were awful to you. And, you know, that's very validating to be able to hear that for her. And she loved that. In my daughter's case, you know, and this was high school stuff, but the lead mobber ended up turning on someone in the group. And it was funny because that one person that she ended up turning on like a year later initially was a really good friend of my daughter's. And then she went along and you knew she was going along because of fear. And, you know, and Anna and I would talk about it. Like, you know what? Sometimes, you know, God bless people. You just can't, you get it, right? Like you get it. As someone who maybe has like participated out of fear, you get it. But this little girl, not little girl, 18 years old, got mobbed by the same person. And she came out talking, not talking to everybody. Like she didn't make a stand, but she came out talking to my daughter and took her to breakfast and said, I am so sorry. And I just want to let you know, you're not crazy. Oh, and I also want to let you know that this is what the lie was. And I knew it wasn't true, but I didn't know how to stop it. And also as people in the group would say, gosh, like Anna's kind of nice. And it was made quite clear that they were not to, you know, get out of line and go back to being your friend or speaking to you. You know, and it was sad because it was happening at school. And so, you know, she was absent many, many, many days, almost so many that she didn't graduate, constantly late to school, constantly getting sick. And, you know, it's very validating that somebody came out talking, right? Just like it did for this woman that relocated. Too little, too late.
Absolutely. But the thing that I'm thinking about, and I've spoken to you and I've spoken on this podcast before about my own histories of bullying, mobbing. So, you know, I get it. The same group in fifth grade that did it to me again a few years ago. And I've had some things happen at workplaces and it really does create a PTSD. I know I had hypervigilance. I know I was watching every word that I said, repeating conversations in my head. Did I say the wrong thing? Am I going to say the wrong thing? Is this going to cause me problems? So, you know, think about just because I'm the psychologist, think about the psychological aspect. You said for the first time in your life, you had to see a psychiatrist. People can't go to school. Right? They're missing school. They are physically ill because we know the impact of stress on your physical health. Think of all of the psychological and physical consequences of this. Why aren't we talking about it? Well, you are, right?
I mean, you are. I am, but I mean, you know, Laura, I got to tell you, it took me a minute. So I started work on it. I mean, I've been doing interviewing people and researching for, I don't know when this will air, but well over a year, And I want to caveat, I'd never seen a psychiatrist. I'd seen a therapist. I think mental health is important. I think as moms, that's where we started in this conversation. You know, you got to teach your kids it's okay to ask for help, all those things. But to go see a psychiatrist, like, hello, like that was a step. That was a really big step. And why are we not talking about it? Because it is uncomfortable. And people just don't know how. People, there's no playbook for this because people don't know how to name it. They don't know how to even spot it. When it's happening to you, and we've talked about it in your case, like you think you're the crazy one.
Yes, that's why I love that the girl who was your daughter's friend was like, look, it's nothing about you. I loved that because I spent, and that got woven into my identity of like, something is wrong with me as a fifth grader that everybody rejected me. That's like a cognitive distortion and a negative core belief that I've had to struggle with my entire life for people who couldn't care less about me and I couldn't care less about them.
Right. Yeah. And I think that you're exactly right. And it manifests itself in different ways, right? You know, my daughter's very resilient. That's been the comment. And I think because of that, nothing was done because they thought she was so strong. So it can manifest itself, as a really smart, woman, Catherine, Lovren said, she was like, you know, sometimes people, they have this core belief about themselves. I'm not good enough, or they start to strive for perfectionism. Mm-hmm. Which is similar to like that woman that I just interviewed that relocated back. You know, she was very, very, very repetitive in telling me that when she went back to her original, you know, state where they were from, I can't even say it because she's like, I don't even want to, like, she's so scared. Yeah. And she said, you know, somebody that used to work with me, they wanted to come back and work for me, Alicia. Like they did. And like, and that made me feel like I'm a good manager. Mm-hmm. And I was like, of course you're a good manager. Like, right. You don't need to have somebody come back to work for you to prove it to me or to you. You know, it was like, she was really smart. She's a lawyer. She was so smart. Mm-hmm. And so when you think about all the things that can be left behind, it could be, you know, I'm not good at my job. I'm not good enough to have friends. I am not skinny enough. I know that's something you talk about in your work. You know, I'm not skinny enough. I'm not pretty enough. There's a million things that people can walk away with if they don't have a name for it and even if you do have a name for it, right? At some point, it's just got to be stopped. Mm-hmm. And I think the worst part of this, Laura, is that the adults in the situation where my daughter experienced it, I think they were going along with this. Most of them were just going along with the lies too. Like they were feeding the shit that was being given to them. Yeah. Yeah. And I'm not even that mad about it anymore. I got to be honest with you, because I just, the more I see this, it's like, you know what? There's no, y'all aren't trained for this.
Yeah. It's really interesting to hear you tell, you know, the story and the impact on people. And one of the things that I'm thinking of is, okay, we're women. We're talking about a lot of women in the workplace. But I can tell you from my bullying, mobbing experience, there are men involved. So this isn't a female thing. It's not just mean girl behavior. So I want to make that very clear so that the guys who are out there who may be experiencing it themselves then may feel worse because they're like, oh, but this is only a woman thing. So what am I going through then?
Yeah. That's so funny because I feel like I keep talking about her, but that she just, you know what she said? She goes, I got mean girled out of my job. That's what she said. And I'm like, oh my gosh. And so we went through the whole thing. And I think it was months ago when you and I met that said, is it just women? Is it more women? And it's not, you know, it's so funny though. I was talking to a man about it and he said, well, like, is there good mobbing? Because like, what happens if you're on a project? And he was giving me an example and, you know, somebody just really wasn't pulling their weight. And he was like, so we kind of like started to kind of box them out a little bit. Like, is that mobbing? And I was like, you know, of course my face that is so, you know, you can't, yeah. I can't like hide. That'd be terrible.
No poker face there.
No poker face with me. Exactly. And so I was like, so there's not a good time to mob. And if someone is not pulling their weight or not doing a good job or whatever, then you should be having the conversation with them. And that kind of goes back to, you know, the kind ethos piece of it beyond mobbing is that, you know, giving people feedback. If in my daughter's case or in any your case, if somebody said, you know what, like, I just feel like our friendship has kind of run its course and, you know, and this is what I would need to get it back on track or whatever. But there's never a willingness when mobbing is taking place socially, for sure. There's never a willingness to get to a good place because that's not their end game. Their end game is to take you out and isolate you. So they're not going to have a tough conversation. Mm-hmm. And chances are the other people around it whether it's human resources or administrators, they're either not, they don't notice it because they don't know. They're like, well, it's not really bullying and, you know, it, don't be dramatic. And they, it's easier to minimize it than to say, I'm seeing something and I can't put my finger on it, but I'm going to ask some questions. And so the art of the tough conversation, as I like to say it, is really at the core of solving this problem.
I also want to point out, and I've said this multiple times on other episodes, HR is not your friend. HR works for the company, not for you.
Yeah.
So I want to just disabuse people of the notion that I will go to HR and HR will fix it. That's likely not going to happen. They don't respond very well from what I've heard from a lot of people who have gone to HR about this is, well, it's rumor, it's underground, you have no proof. It makes it a very, very difficult situation. So then you're having something happen, you're trying to report it, and then you're not getting support for that either, which then reinforces, is it me?
Exactly. I mean,
I think we need a support group for this. Let's form a support group for this. I wonder how many people would actually join if they knew that what they were struggling with was a thing.
Look, let's do it. I think anybody that's listening to this, I love focus groups. I would love to do more of this. You know, it's so funny because I love what you just said, and I have great friends in HR and they're awesome. I also, at a company a while ago, I didn't realize it right when it happened, but now I do. The HR leader at the very top of the global organization was probably the best mobber I've ever seen. Like, I don't know many people that could be her, could just do it like she did it. And that I wish I knew then what I know now, and or else I would not have called her on the way to the hospital. Saying, please make him stop sending me these emails.
Yeah.
And I wish I could unsee the text message that was shown to me, a group thread, after I left that company where she called me a drama queen for my stupid mastectomy.
Gotcha. There you go.
Noted.
That's the work culture right there. And again, this is to diss all HR employees, but just to bring out the point that HR does work for the company. That's the facts.
Absolutely. And I'm not, like I said, I have great friends that work in HR, and not everybody is like that, but at its core, you know, they've got to protect the company. I can't imagine. I've always, when I started this, I was like, well, nothing's going to be make change without consequences, right? If somebody says, hey, I'm being mobbed and there's not a consequence, then people are going to keep doing it. But the reality is it's going to take enough of this reporting it to make people take notice, because I can't imagine an HR law firm that represents companies in the world that is going to be booking me for a meeting. I can tell that right now. They don't want to see me because they don't want more things to have to, their companies to have to deal with. And that's okay.
Your passion is so contagious because, you know, this is an issue that I've spoken about previously. The fact that you've taken this and run with it is amazing. And I'm thinking, you know, as you mentioned, we all have done it. And I'm thinking about circumstances where I was sucked into situations where I don't think I handled them the way I would have liked to. And one of the things I've done over the past couple of years, if we want to look a little bit on what you can do or what you can't do or whatever, is when I see things happening, I say to people outright, I'm friends with everybody. I don't diss this person. I don't diss this person. You're all entitled to have your opinion, but I'm friends with her. I'm friends with you. I'm friends with that person. So I think it gives that, sets that boundary and gives that message right away that I'm not going to participate in this.
Yeah.
And I know what's going on.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's courageous. I don't think that in most cases today, until we say, gosh, that kind of feels like mobbing and you're better than that, meaning like the person that's telling you, or, you know, because again, it's more than just saying something like, you know, I really, you know, do not like that she, you know, just dyed her hair pink. Like, okay, fine. Like, look, I'm friends with her. Don't say that. Like, that's me, right? This is more of like, you know, we're now going to not speak to this person. You know, somebody asked my daughter, hey, why don't we talk to you anymore? Because I just was told I can't talk to you. Do you know?
Geez.
Like, can you imagine? And so it was a boy, by the way, that said that to her. And so, you know, but I think, you know, Laura, the problem I'm not trying to call you out, but the problem with just saying like, I'm friends with them, I'm friends with you in a real mobbing situation. Guess what? Laura's going to stop getting invited.
Yeah, it's going to turn on me.
It's going to turn on you. And people know that. Like, I think that's what makes people, you're incredibly strong. You've experienced it. Obviously, you're, you know, EQ is like super high, right? Mm-hmm. So it's easy for you to say that. But the most people in that split second are like, I don't want that person's wrath on me. You know, I mean, literally, I am knee deep in this shit. And on Saturday, I, you know, had an experience with someone that, I'm at a boundary, right? We happen to be in the same sports team, and they were saying something about someone that I happen to like. And so they were like, you know, this person is whatever. I was like, you know, I was like, I respect that that's the experience that you've had with her, but I got to tell you, I've had some like
exactly
good experiences with her. And I really would love to help you see that side of it, because it's going to really make this whole dynamic better. If we can all like figure out a way to look together.
I love that. I love that.
But that's because that's an environment. The thing is that one thing is like when you're, you know, having lunch with your girlfriends or the moms at the school, whatever. I mean, there's going to be situations where they're going to turn on you and there ain't nothing you can do, you know, and you just have to figure it out. But at work or in a school environment or, you know, an athletic team, whether it's the kids or the parents, like there, you got to find common ground. And the companies that don't foster that, I mean, there's a management philosophy, which is basically make your lieutenants compete because that's going to like, and I don't know that that's where I don't think that that is effective.
That's interesting. And, you know, it's easy for me to say, and I'll put it out there for people who are listening. It's easy for me to say that my goal is I'm getting along with everybody. I'm not going to have this drama. If you like this person, don't like this person, fine. But I have a good experience with them. That's all well and good. I don't work for companies anymore. I'm a consultant. And that's one of the reasons why I don't work for companies anymore, is because I can say then, I know you don't like this person. I've worked with them. I haven't had any problems with them. So, you know, that's my experience. But a lot of people in the workplace or at school or in a college they are trapped. So I want to make that point that it is at this point in my life easier to be able to do that. And listen, if someone then decides that they want to gang up on me because I've said that I'm friends with that person, listen, you know, I'm 55. I don't care.
Right.
Right. I'm at a different stage in my life where it's like, okay, if that's what's going to happen, that's what's going to happen.
Agree. And the thing is that, you know, by the time people that have that kind of MO get to be 55 years old, look at the string of damage in their wake.
Yeah. You know, it's not getting here was very easy. Right. And you're still, because of the past, looking over your shoulder, wondering, is this going to be a problem or not? So what do you think the solution is?
I mean, I think the solution is, you know, once, well, like things like sexual harassment, you know, like once things get a name to it, they become really easy to spot. And so I think just naming it and having a name, number one, I think it helps people that have experienced it because now they can attach something to that and it does feel very validating. I hope that by naming it also that people who might be, you know, coerced to being complicit or going along with it or not speaking up, you know, and maybe, you know, at minimum, if the person that's just going along with it can even just ask the person that is being mobbed, look, are you okay? Like, I'm petrified of her too, but I hate what's happening to you. I think even just that little bit of acknowledgement, like, this is mobbing and understanding, like I'm participating in it by participating in it. But like, I think even just that small moving of the needle is something, but I think it's really going to start stopping after we name it. We teach people how to spot it, right? Naming and spotting it. The spark that starts it will always be there because there's always going to be assholes in this world. Mm-hmm. And then it's just teaching people when they spot it, what to do. And that's part of kind of this playbook that I've written, which is, how to start a conversation, how to have a conversation. Who do you have the conversations with?
Great question.
Right? And the reality is, if once you spot it, you can see a pattern, right? These two used to work really well together. Now they don't. What happened? Ask them, you got to know that somebody's going to lie. You got to know that. Mm-hmm. And it's normally not the person that's being ostracized is probably not lying.
Mm-hmm.
In bullying, that's a whole different dynamic. Socially, I think that a school administrator, teacher, when there's a shift in behavior, someone who maybe was super talkative or whatever, or people that had been friends for years and all of a sudden they're not, like, what's going on? And there has to be that line of humanity that we teach the next generation, which is you do not need to be friends with everybody.
Uh-huh.
But when we're in an academic setting and I put you in a group or whatever, like, you just can't be an asshole. Like, it's unacceptable, because when you're going to go to work one day, and that's going to be unacceptable for you to keep your job if you behave like that. I mean, I think we have to start to train the next generation. We've groomed corporate leaders to do this because of the same people that did it to you when you were in fifth grade. They're now wreaking havoc on all the places that they work, I am sure.
We see it in the news all the time.
All the time.
Mm-hmm.
All the time. Hell, I write about this in the book, but I remember, Laura, when Survivor, that show, came out. I was long in my career, and I was like, I told my husband, I was like, we were probably dating at the time. I was like, I think I got to watch this show because this is like corporate gamesmanship
at
its finest,
And like, point. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So we teach people, you watch all the, I shouldn't admit this out loud. My husband's going to die when I say this, but like, I watch all the Bravo shows, and you watch it, how they calculate the housewives and how they start to target.
Oh, yeah.
So now we're just teaching people how to do that. And, the resolution, the difference is a lot of times they are forced, right? They go to the reunion and they have to talk about it and all the things, but sometimes you just got to talk about it, and you might not end up being best friends. But you know what? Like, at least you can say, we can coexist and people don't have to pick sides, and it just doesn't have to be uncomfortable for everybody else and toxic.
Right. That's it. So tell us about the book, and when is the book coming out?
So I think the book is going to be ready soon. We've been working on the publisher thing, so we'll figure that out. But hopefully at the end of this year, first quarter of next year. I can't hold it any longer because everybody's anxious, because it's got so much of the playbook. So that'll be coming out. I think it's giving a lot of stories, different stories. I don't want people, people that hear this be like, oh, that's Mean Girls. I've seen the movie. Like, it's not. There, it happens to men. It's so misunderstood. So I really want people to read it and understand it's a book for people that aspire to be leaders one day. It's a book for people who are, managing people already or in positions of power. Coaches should read, athletic coaches. Some kid gets mobbed because their stat line is too high and they got to leave a team. Yeah. They might not ever get a college scholarship. I mean, there's so much impact, like we were talking about earlier. So I've tried to write it for a broad variety of audiences. Any books that are out there now, and there's a couple about mobbing, are super, super, super academic that I kept on having to Google some of the terms. Mm-hmm. I don't have a psychology degree. I have a business degree in communications. Right. So I'm writing this for all the people that we can all understand it and figure out ways as leaders to either not participate in it and stop it.
I love it. I love it. So where can people reach you to get more information?
So I'd say the best thing right now is find us on LinkedIn or on Instagram, and go to Kind Ethos or go to me personally. I respond to everything. And if you have a story and you want to share it off the record, you know, find us, Kind Ethos, Alicia Leshesky, on either of those channels, you know, DM me and I'm happy to talk to you. And if, you know, I'm, you know, ahead of the book, obviously we are working to consult with different companies and schools, because it shouldn't take the book coming out. Like, we've got the curriculum, we've got all those things, in order to work with leaders, you know, on really how to curb this. I don't have the stats. I'm not a psychologist or a psychiatrist, but I have been told that, you know, teen suicide is obviously a big deal for all of us. So we should all care about it. And some could be related to mobbing. So, you know, you don't know, like, something that we're just dismissing. You don't know that somebody's going to have the resilience to overcome it. Adults might not have the resilience to overcome it. So it's important to pay attention to it, even if it's not something that you think is, you know, you think it's dramatic, might not be dramatic for somebody.
Might not be dramatic. Absolutely. Yeah. To dismiss it as mean girl stuff also invalidates that mean girl stuff is not right.
Right. Right.
So I love that. So are you taking on clients for?
Yeah, we are. We are taking on clients right now. I do cap it because I like my marketing agency. I do, you know, I do like to go, you know, all in, but yeah, I mean, we have, you know, half day workshops, hour talks or whatever. So we have kind of small things up to longer engagements that we can work with. But, you know, honestly, 1 to 2 hours with your leadership team and sometimes is enough to at least curb it. And again, stronger teams are much more effective, right? We know that we've worked, you know, think about in college. I mean, I did so many group projects when I was in business school and, you know, you're only as good as your weakest link, right? In the team. So why not galvanize them and make them a powerhouse? Even if they're not best friends, even if they don't have to go to Starbucks afterwards, just be good when you're working together.
When you're working together. Absolutely. Thank you so much, Alicia. I really appreciate your time. I am so looking forward to the book. I can't even tell you. We've had some conversations. I think it is going to be a tremendous hit. And I am just so happy that you brought this out, because a lot of people are going to benefit from your work and from the book. So thank you so much. And thank you for tuning in to From Mayhem to Mindset with Dr. Laura. Stay tuned for the next episode. Peace out. Thanks for joining us on From Mayhem to Mindset. If you found today's episode helpful, be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and leave a 5-star review. It really helps spread the message. Want to dive deeper? Check out my book, Wisdom from the Universe, available now on Amazon. And if you're looking for a speaker to inspire and transform, I'd love to connect. Visit www.lauraellick.com to learn more. Remember, you don't have to just survive, you can thrive. See you next time.